Hitting revenue targets is hard and requires constant hustle. Last quarter's success is already forgotten. Learn the mindset and tactics of today's most successful revenue producers in B2B marketing and sales. We call this the revenue hustle. I'm your host, Tom Hessen, navigating you on this journey. Today's show is sponsored by 9Lenses, an interactive assessment platform that enables you to add instant value to your buyers and allows your sales team to tailor business conversations focused on the pain points each and every time. Check them out at 9Lenses.com.
All right, this is your host, Tom Hessen, host of the Revenue Hustle, and it is my distinct pleasure to welcome Angela Hooper to the podcast. Angela, welcome to the Revenue Hustle.
Thank you, Tom.
So Angela, you are the Vice President of Global Customer Success at Alation. So why don't you just give us a little bit of bio and just tell us a little bit about yourself and we'll dive into the revenue rules.
All right. Thank you again for having me on the podcast. I've been looking forward to this for a couple of weeks now. My role at Alation is the Vice President of Global Customer Success, and I have customer success can mean a lot of different things to different organizations. So I like to kind of tell you the type of people and the type of goals that we accomplish with our customers on my team. So I have customer success management. I have customer success engineering, which is more of a technical focus. And then I have account and revenue renewal management, hence the revenue podcast here. So those are the three main functions that I have domain over. I have a global presence. We have APAC, Europe, multiple leaders in the North America region, and also our public sector, federal space, and other growth engines underneath that as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for that. Yes, I've been looking forward to this as well. And you know how we do this on the Revenue Hustle? We have revenue rules. So why don't you just go ahead and give us your first revenue rule?
Okay, so my first revenue rule that I've come to curate over the last 20 years of experience is, yes, it's ABC for always be closing when it comes to sales, but it takes a slightly different turn, and customer success has an ABC as well. So the customer success rule for ABCs is always to promote adoption, focusing on business benefits and building competencies and champions within your customer.
Awesome.
So a little fun spin on the ABCs for sales that we always see the memes on. But that's our core rule and the core program that I've developed over the years with different organizations.
And so that's A is for adoption. So adoption, say those again, I'm gonna write those down.
Yep, it's adoption, business benefits. That's a fancy way for saying value,
right?
For you value sellers out there. And then the C's are competencies and champions. You got to have champions in revenue. But the biggest thing for customer success is that you're developing competencies within your customer. That's training, that's understanding the program, that's getting them to follow a success plan, so that they are a competent user and consumer of the software that you're having them buy, you know, every year on your subscription revenue. Because if they can't do it themselves and become competent, my job as a customer success leader is not staff aug. I don't want CSMs hanging out and having to hold hands forever. We have to build competencies within our customers where they can't survive and do this on their own.
I love that. You don't really think about, it's easy. And I'm probably guilty of this in my own world here at 9Lenses is, you know, customer success can be that white glove experience. Like we want to give that oftentimes to clients, and that sometimes maybe, well, I'll do that for you, right? Just I'll take that off your plate. And there probably are times for that, but it's easy to fall into that trap where they just, hey, Tom, I need you to do this, or Angela, I need you to do this. And you're like, okay. And all of a sudden you become staff aug. That's an interesting point about developing the competency for them to do it themselves, right?
Or it's also kind of a strategic piece too. As a global VP, I am responsible for P&Ls. I have budgets. I have an 18-month and 24-month strategies that I have to adhere to and align to our corporate strategies. One of those is to control costs, right? And if you're not developing competencies and growing inorganically that customer success ABCs with your customer, you're going to take on a lot of costs as a leader. So having that as part of the mission to build more self-sustaining customers is also self-serving to my budget. I'm not going to present a model that shows 3 to 5x growth of my team because I want to do things better, more efficiently with fewer people.
Oh, no, that's great. So how do you want to go through the ABC? So we just talked a little bit about competencies. Do you want, is there an order in which you go through them, or is like, is A, adoption kind of step one in the foundation here, or is they all kind of independently needed?
I don't think that there's really a linear order to these things, because if we talk about the customer lifecycle and that transition from a pre-sales to a post-sales and what happens in the handoff, you know, typically it'll start with champions, right? The champion that helped sign and ink that deal and the benefits, the business benefits that they want to achieve or that success goal. So typically, if we kind of think of it through the life cycle, some important things about that champion is developing relationships with the champion that was the executive buyer. And I think that's new to some organizations when they think of customer success. Mm-hmm. Listen, I need customer success managers to speak at that executive buyer at that champion level, not just here's your support tickets, right? And so having an account executive and a customer success manager together nurture that relationship with a champion is very important, mm-hmm. because you'll have consistency over the life of that subscription revenue. So I think one thing that's really important is keeping that champion happy, keeping the champion's goals and that EB's goals front and center. But the goals are not in the technical details. They're right. not. They're not in the let's connect to this data source or let's do this technical piece of the product. That kind of gets you to the business benefits or the value. Value sellers are going to really attach to a high level pain within an organization and say, we can create better business objectives, better business outcomes, better business value and benefits by doing this with the software solution. So understanding what was that business benefit they're trying to achieve, mm-hmm. and keeping that as the thread throughout the customer success engagement. If we land a customer and I don't have a business benefit, it's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard to say, to get out of the technical weeds and up into what matters to move things forward. So we're constantly aligning to that business benefit, and not only aligning to it, but proving it. So one of the things that I have customer success managers think about is, hey, listen, when you're talking to your customers, you're talking to all kinds of different people within the organization. And they might say, I love Alation. I love that we have this and I can't live without it. Now, some people are just going to be like, that's great. Yay, we're doing our job.
Right.
And I'm like, I really challenge people to say, why? Why do you love it? What's the benefit that you're getting out of it?
Right, right.
Is it a personal benefit? Is it a benefit for your business? Is that business benefit helping to drive revenue? You know, top line, red numbers or black numbers, and ask those second level, third level qualifying questions when you hear those great things like, I love your product, and then write it down. Write it down so that it's easily consumable. You can give like one slide, one sheet of paper, one little customer testimonial that says what that business benefit is. And guess what? Go hand that to your champion, and your champion can read it and be like, great, here's some tangible proof that we're aligning and keeping with what I wanted to do here with this monetary investment. So once you start building this business benefit kind of slide deck of here's what we're doing, here's what we're doing well, you're arming a champion. So see how these things kind of go together. With
I love the business benefit and the champion because those two are interlocked, because oftentimes I was just talking to one of our customers in customer success yesterday, and we were talking about her software and their onboarding process and this idea that their champion oftentimes never actually is a user of the software, right? And it's probably not uncommon in technical solutions, right? And so it's this idea of how do you keep the business, or in your case, the champion engaged when they're not that close to the, you know, the training and all the interactions mm-hmm. within the software, and they don't speak the tech, right? And so, and they come in and out of the relationship. And so this idea of keeping them connected, right? Sharing the nuggets you were just describing back to the champion around the business benefit. But then also, I think what's really hard, one thing you talked about, I want to dig into a little bit, is how do you get your CSMs comfortable talking to that champion? Because that is the, that's a million-dollar question right there, Angela, because this is something we talk about all the time, because it's hard to be, you know, be able to scale your expertise from the technical, the product, all the way up to mm-hmm. speaking as a peer to a business, you know, like to your champion.
Yeah. So I think two things are really important. I walked through what I have under my department and in global customer success here at Alation. And I have customer success managers and I have customer success engineers. And then I also have renewal or account managers. Mm-hmm. And I say that there's three different conversations in an account. There's a technical conversation, there's a value conversation, and there's a commercial conversation. I have three roles for a very specific reason. If there's technical blockers, you're going to have to get through those. You're going to have to get through those technical weeds and get things going right in the product. This is like, we sell software. This happens everywhere. It's always going to be there. But sometimes those problems or those technical blockers are really deep and you need an engineering,
right,
but yet customer facing person to help get in, break it apart and get out. So you can have a technical conversation. You can have a value conversation. That's the customer success manager. What are the successes? What are the goals? What's the business benefits? How are we driving adoption? But you can't, no customer wants to have a value conversation with your CSM at an EB level if there's blockers and technical problems,
right?
And then to take that to another level, if you don't have a value anchored in value, you have not earned your right to have a commercial conversation. So all three of those people mm-hmm. in an account, all three of those roles work together to not only help the customer reach their success plan and success goals, but to help, you know, your company, the company you work for, reach theirs, which is to expand and grow the footprint of their software solution. So how do I get the executive buyer and the champion to talk to a customer success manager? I try to keep those customer success managers' conversations really in the value lane. Mm. When they get into support tickets or technical blockers, or then they even muddy the water with, well, you know, your renewal's coming up and we got to get blah, 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 as far as commercial concessions. No, now the EV is like, no, you're here to sell me something or you're here to go fix my problems. You have to anchor and set the conversation basis for that customer success manager on, no, we're here to build value in your organization and we're here to help drive your success plan. If you can minimize the low impact conversations that a CSM is having, that's when they will become more valuable to your champion and to your,
right,
your executive buyer.
And how have you trained or got that across in the team? Because again, usually the CSM is earlier on their career, right? They're not, someone that's got VP level experience, right? And you may be dealing with someone like at the VP mm-hmm. level. So how do you get them to feel comfortable or confident in that discussion?
We do some role plays. I do training. So I'm a big proponent of, we use success coaching. I don't know if you've been on that website. They offer some good industry best practices and external training for customer success managers on how to handle conflict situations, how to level up your conversations. And then I will pay for that, right? I'm not going to create that program internally at Alation. Right. I will pay for somebody to go do that. Absolutely. And then there's the biggest thing is hiring good leaders. If you hire some customer success directors, which I have wonderful customer success directors that have years and years of experience and are very focused on developing people. Mm-hmm. You cannot skimp on the leadership layer. A lot of companies, especially right now in uncertain financial climates, are going to say, oh, we'll cut this or we won't. We'll load up that leader with 15 people underneath them. No, that's not development. That's not leveraging your leader for what they're there for, which is ride-alongs with your CSMs, pre-runs on the conversation. Okay, what are you going to present? How are you going to present this to the champion and the EB? What are you going to say? How can I help? Let's coach you through this. Have that meeting and then have a follow-up. So don't skimp on leadership, because our job here is to develop those people that are earlier in their careers to have those conversations. Right. And the best thing to do is to hire some fewer people at a leadership level that know how to handle those conversations and can pass that on and develop the next line of leadership.
No, that's great. Yeah. Cause I think that's, you know, it's hard to gain experience without gaining the experience, right? So you've got to navigate these CSMs through this journey and, you know, lift them up and support them. I think the directors too, probably provide a safety net too, right? Just, you know, in case that they, get into trouble or new situations, you know, they need that. So no, that's great. Cause I do think that's a common challenge within the customer success world, is how do you present a CSM in a way that they're comfortable and confident to an executive?
The customer segmentation helps as well, right? Like, I'm not going to throw somebody I just hired 3 months ago that's brand new to customer success on a Fortune 200 account, right? So we give people the ability to succeed in their role. Where are their strengths? Where are they going to align to the right customer segmentation, and then build up, get more experience with a really, really high powered company and executive that's cutthroat, right? You don't want to throw somebody into that mix right away.
And so I'm curious, like, how do you take the ABCs and how do you like formalize that into your plans, right? Like I suspect like, you take the A and the B and this two C's and you're like, okay, well, that's manifested in this plan or this approach or this way we do QBRs, or, you know, so just how do you make that a little tactical, you know, or down to the plan level?
Yeah. One of the things that we're doing is most people will align their playbooks, their customer success playbooks, to the different stages of a customer life cycle. And that's great. I think that's pretty much industry standard right now. You have onboarding playbooks, you have these type of playbooks, you have churn playbooks. Yeah, you have all of those. But one of the things that we're doing here with our customer success platform is we're also organizing those playbooks in terms of the ABCs. And the ABCs is a framework for the customer success manager to think, okay, in my day, in my week, how much am I talking or driving adoption? How much am I actually focused on that business benefit for my customer? What am I doing to train and develop a competency for my customer? What am I doing to talk to a champion? And then having playbooks under, all right, I'm not doing enough in adoption, or business benefit is falling to the wayside. I can see on my calendar that I'm not doing enough of it. Then you can go to that portion of the playbooks and say, all right, business benefit, here's an example. Here's a couple of things that we can do in order to spur that on and to create business benefit and value statements within your customer. So the organization of time management and playbook management, and then also the just beating it into the entire company culture of, notice I said customer success isn't here to drive net retention, because if you say that to a customer, they're gonna be like, oh great, you're just here to pump us for more money.
Right.
And so that I'm saying our key focus, dear customer, is to do these things for you and then align the entire like day methodology around the customer success manager to do these things. Sales is behind us. When they talk about what customer success does, they know it's ABCs, because it's not always be closing. It's these three things, right? So it's just like trying to get the message out and then trying to plan your day and think about in your one-on-ones with your leaders, how am I doing to drive these things? We also run something akin, I don't know if you have ever heard or read about the 4DX program from Franklin Covey. So it's a way of essentially taking one great big goal and breaking it into smaller sections and giving focus to, I'm going to do these two things this week in order to move forward towards my big goal. And so what we're starting to roll out, we've done it in a portion and a pilot portion in the West for customer success management here, is focused on what our weekly commits are. And our weekly commits are two to three things that we commit to our teammates and say, I'm going to do a use case session with my customer to try to identify more business benefits or beneficial use cases. And I'm going to work towards getting that scheduled, or I'm going to work towards the agenda for that. And so really committing that you're going to do something to drive forward one of those ABCs. And we do it on a weekly basis. And it's kind of like a huddle or a stand-up scrum, if you will.
Yep.
And it's, I like to say, it's calling your shot. Like in the Sandlot or Babe Ruth, he's going to call his shot. I'm going there. And holding people to what they say they're going to do. Notice I didn't say holding people accountable and, you know, shaking your fingers at what the problem is on accountability. But it's like, hey, if you say you're going to do it and you know this is your goal, let's break it into accomplishable pieces and go for it. So I'm just giving the framework of the ABCs as far as the goals and the time management for customer success to help get us to our big goal, which is net retention.
Yeah, no, I love that. No, that's really good. And I think too, it's like you're letting them say what their goals are, right? I mean, it's so the more that they say it, they picked it, they have control over that. It's not like you're giving them the goals and telling them to hit it. I'm sure there's obviously influence with management and whatnot, but no, I think that's really good on how you do the stand up, get them to commit, and then let them execute on that.
Yeah, I have to give a shout out though, because when I talk about not skimping on leadership levels, I like to try to hire a director and leadership team that brings new ideas and rounds me out as far as experiences. And I bringing 4DX to the organization was one of my director, Matt Jolly. He came from Sprinklr. And so he's like, we did this at my last company. It worked really well. I think it works with this program that we're building around the ABCs. Let's do it. And so lots of kudos to hiring leaders, listening for their ideas, how we can bring the best of everyone's experiences into the company. And you know, I'll have fun doing it. So big shout out to hiring leaders and listening to what great experiences they've had in the past.
No, that's great. I love the ABC framework. I'm going to steal that. So I'll give you credit though. All right. Well, we had a full discussion there. Why don't we transition to our second revenue rule? Why don't you share that with us?
Okay, so my second revenue rule that actually started as a piece of feedback that I received as in professional development and feedback over the years. And my second revenue rule is don't lead with no. So it's one of these things that's very subtle. I've been in conversations where the very first thing that you say and you respond with is I can't, or the negative. And I can't get this done, or this customer is non-compliant, so no. And even if you don't say the word no, your body is saying the word no, your reasoning is saying the word no. And so especially in revenue, whether it be when you're trying to close the deal and you're in negotiations, or you're just trying to get to that next step and that next stage to progress that opportunity, I think we lose sight and we think about and we can position the no. I can tell you all the reasons no, but switch that mindset and tell me what you can do to move it forward. Can we do this? To steal from my head of people, what's your best yes? What's the best thing that you can do to move it forward? How can I say yes instead of leading with all of the reasons why not? I actually got that feedback when I was running a sales engineering role. I was doing a sales engineering role, and it was don't put in your own objections, right? Put in your own objection handling into the process. Just sometimes you can say, does your software do this? And the answer can be yes. It doesn't have to be, well, we do this, 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 and this, which is essentially a no. Sometimes it's okay to just say yes and move on.
Right. Right. And I think this is important because it's, it's easy to say no. I mean, you see this, I mean, again, we're both in the revenue generating category, right? Our goal is to try to get customers to say yes to us, whether that be a renewal or an expansion opportunity. And you just laid out the ABCs, and it's so much easier to say no, right? Because I don't have to think about it. I don't have to worry about something. It's just one, you know, I'm taking it off my plate for a lot of times, or it's a defensive mechanism, right? And so it when I say no to a customer or to whatever it may be, it just puts the other person, like there's an emotional response to the no. Like, what was it about the feedback that you got? And what was the context around that? So was it like, you know, like you said, your body language is saying no. So you're communicating all sorts of stuff, and it's and how that's being received, I suspect, is part of the, you know, the feedback that you got.
It was in that particular case. And I've given that feedback to others, because once you get that feedback, you see it everywhere, right? Like you see people doing it everywhere. But one of the things I think on the leading with no, or, you know, lead with yes, or don't lead with no, is you're taking no in giving these, this reasoning is a self-preservation, like you said, defensive. But who are you defending? You're defending your position. You're defending, oh, this will happen to me or to my team, or to, this is the consequence that I'll have to endure if that happens. Right. You're not thinking in terms of the customer, right? So getting to yes is switching your mindset into how is it good for the customer as well, instead of how is it self-centered on me? Now, there's a level of that where I'm sure people are going to listen to this podcast and be like, yeah, sure, Angela, until you get walked all over by this, by not saying no, then you're selling vaporware and all this negative stuff.
Right,
no,
right.
I mean, I'll say no on that one. But when you are collaborative and when you're trying to get to your best yes and trying to work with the customer, it shows and it comes through, and you're building trust. You're building that champion. When you do say no, because you will have to at some point, no, I am not going to give you a 50% reduction in this contract cost. No. And I will come out and say no. Right. However, I can do this and this and this and this to equate 50% of value of services of free training, but I can't give you the dollars.
Right.
But you can
right.
say no. In those no, particular yeah. cases, and not get walked over. It's just not always leading with no.
Yeah. And I think it's easy. You know, I find myself, you have to say, you're right. You say yes to what you can say. So even if there's 99 things you have to say no to, lead with the one thing that you can do and say, these are the other things that you can't do. Because oftentimes it's always easy to say, well, we can't do it. Right. And you're like, well, actually we can do a little bit of it. I mean, there's value in just knowing that. And I think, like I had a situation just in the last couple of weeks with a big account that we're working. They have some very challenging privacy and security restrictions, mm-hmm. just corporately. It has nothing to do with our software. And they put us in this, like, you know, can you do all these gymnastics, right? Because this is the only approval process we have if you jump through all these gymnastics. I'm like, oh man, you know, and I went back with my team and I'm like, well, we can do that. We should also seek exceptions to, you know, from privacy and security, because you're going to get more value if you can do, you know. And I didn't even have that in my you know, I'm ashamed to say this, but my first version of the deck, I led with, these are all the wonderful things you could do if you got us these additional exceptions, right? And so then I'm like, you know what? I need to just say, we can do this one thing, and they can all take a breath. Be like, okay, check the box. We can do that one thing. And yes, we may want to do those other things, but neither one of us know, like, what the outcome of, you know, the security people will say. But it's just a perfect example of, I completely had to, you know, and this was like a day before this big presentation, I just put that in there, and it completely changed the dynamic of the conversation when they were like, okay, we know we can do at least one thing. So, yeah. I mean, it's to your point.
I had a good sales leader at ThoughtSpot that I worked with. And he, even in the negotiations or in the, as we're scoping a proof of concept in a pre-sales cycle, yes, you can do that. Like, how do you get to yes? Can we show this? But just show enough of it to check the box,
right,
instead of no, I'm not going to do this. Or even ask more clarifying questions. If you're not leading with no, I mean, lead with a question. Which out of these 57 different compliance issues that we have to meet for the RFP are the most important? like help me funnel it down here to your security questions, which we've all been there on those conversations. Yes, I can hit some of these. If I know which ones are the most important, I can provide backup information as well.
It
sets the tone so differently in conversations and builds trust. And that's at the heart of what customer success does, is we're there to build trust, to be advisors, and right. to move the success plans forward for the customer and for the company that we work for.
And how have you given that feedback, or how have the people you've given that feedback to received it, right? Because again, you were in that seat, right? So I'm sure you have some empathy when you give it, but how has that been received?
So one specific case, I was working with a professional services director on, and we were trying to scope out a set of work to move a customer forward. And we were on a call, he had written some emails, we're on a call. And afterwards, I just pinged him on Slack and I said, "Hey man, can you call me?" And he called me. And we were, I want to say, I was kind of, his VP was my peer. So there was a little bit of like matrix management in that we all have to work together towards this account. But hey, I wanted to give you this feedback. Are you aware that everything you said told the sales team no? We're trying to do the strategy for this customer and you said no. He's like, "I did? Yeah. Yeah, that's how it came across, is no." Maybe just a quick little tweak on, yes, we can do this, this, and this, but these are my outstanding concerns. But start with the yes, and you're going to get more buy-in. And he was like, "Thank you. I didn't think about it that way." And so he was grateful and then came back over the top with an email that led with yes. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you just don't recognize it in yourself until somebody says it. So. Now I've also given the feedback and it's been very defensively received, so that's okay. But I think the fact that I'm also really big on the feedback being immediate. And so I was in that call, I observed it, I heard it, I saw the physical reactions and then the Slacks from all the salespeople of, "Darn it, he just never wants to work with us and he's so difficult." Like, okay, I know this, but to get to that person 1 minute, 5 minutes after that call and say, "It's fresh in your head. Here's what I observed. Here's some feedback. You can action it," but it's the, when you bottle all of that feedback up and give it quarterly in your merit cycle, like it's worth it and it's not impactful. So on the leading with no, if you see it and you come at it empathetically with the person, but make it immediate, because I think that they're not going to see it 2 weeks from now, or building a case of, "Hey, this email said no, and these actions and this and this and this, and you said no to this guy, and now you have a bad reputation." No, nip it in the bud now.
Yeah,
like give that feedback now. And we're all trying to get to the right state with our customers and through the sales process, but it just helps build collaboration. But I think the important piece of that feedback is recognizing it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Now, you hit it right on the head there. Like it builds trust when you do say no, because you've already been more collaborative through the process, right? So when people feel that you're working together to find that outcome that you're all working towards, you know, you may end up finding all the different reasons why you can't, but at least you're working really hard to find it, right? And I think it's just that mentality of openness. And I love those conversations with clients. It's like, "Well, thank you for just being open to just trying to work it through with me," right? Or, "I'm trying to be open to work it through with you," right? We may not get to a yes, but at least we tried everything we could to find a way to make it happen. And I think everyone appreciates, rather than just saying, "Nope, sorry." And everyone's like, "Well, you didn't even, you know, try. I mean, we didn't even talk about it," right? So now that's great. So Angela, how did you get into CS?
I would say about 8 years ago, it was just starting to become a thing. I was in services. I had a professional services organization, and like a small consultancy. And what you're doing there as you're managing and growing that portfolio of work is kind of customer success.
Right.
And then I went into software and was classically trained at IBM in sales and selling from a sales engineering perspective. And the piece is that, sorry, there's somebody knocking at my door.
It's all right. You want to take
2 seconds, Tom. All right, I'm so no sorry. Worries. Yeah.
That's all right.
Sorry, that was bad timing.
No worries.
But what I was going to say, so I got into it because I went into sales engineering, but I was sales engineer for large accounts like Verizon's, Nike's, Boeing's, and you're selling to the base. They already have some subscriptions and you're trying to add on. Like that's customer success. And then I got tapped on the shoulder. I was a sales engineering leader. And I got tapped on the shoulder by my chief revenue officer. And he said, hey, what you're doing there, I want you to do it over here with this team and drive expansions. I was like, huh, what? What? Like I was out of post sales. Like I had gotten out of that.
I don't want to go into
that anymore. And then and I started thinking about it. I was like, okay, obviously when the opportunity, when the door opens for a different role and somebody shoves you through it, you try it out. So I tried it out and liked it. And it's just a really good combination of all the experiences I've had and seeing it as truly a revenue driver and helping customers adopt and get value out of the software is something that I had been doing for my entire career. So it's just a natural fit. And I think what I'd like to get through to anybody listening is customer success is a lot of skills from other walks of life, right? It's sales skills, it's sales engineering skills, it's professional services skills, it's consulting skills, it's project management skills, it's product marketing skills. Some of my best friends are product marketers, and telling that story and telling it towards value is marketing for your product. So not being closed off to what this role is and how important this role is to driving revenue on the long haul and the LTV of your customer that your financial folks are so concerned about, that's a strong customer success organization to help drive that revenue forward.
That's awesome. No, thank you for sharing that. How can we follow you online?
So I usually will post on LinkedIn. So I try to use that as a thought leadership platform. Occasionally I have industry specific blog posts on Alation.com and our blog there. And then always reach out again on LinkedIn. And I'm so happy to be a part of this podcast.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun. Looking forward to sharing this with the community. And I'm confident we're all going to be talking about the ABCs of customer success shortly. So I think you're onto something there. I love that. So thanks again, Angela. Let's do it again soon.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you for tuning in to The Revenue Hustle. This episode has been brought to you by 9Lenses. Close more deals with interactive assessments. Check them out at 9Lenses.com. See you next time.